Moonwise, a podcast celebrating seasons, cycles, and rites of passage. I'm your host, Dorte Sophie Royal, and today I speak with Erin Schalfhunt about navigating the borderlands of our lives by working with the elements. She shares her insights about the Celtic Wheel of the Year, how to fail gracefully, and connect more deeply with inner knowing. Before we begin, I want to make sure you know that I've launched a weekly magazine dedicated to inspiration and seasonal wisdom, including astrology and recommendations for events, books, and other things I think you'll love. You can sign up to get issues delivered straight to your inbox at moonwise.co/magazine. I'm also very excited to share that I've opened pre-orders for print copies of Rooted, a pregnancy journal that honors the inward path to motherhood. The journal sold out of its first edition, so I'm thrilled to be able to offer it again. You can order your copy at moonwise.co/rooted. Erin Schalfhunt is an author, educator, and is pursuing a doctorate in counseling psychology. She's rooted in indigenous earth-based wisdom practices, Hatha Yoga, Hakomi, a mindfulness-based somatic psychotherapy, and Buddhist meditation. She's currently accepting clients of all ages and backgrounds who are navigating big life transitions and wanting to find purpose and fullness in their pursuits. She is adept in integration work for plant medicine experiences and also creates powerful ceremonial and sacred spaces for deep work. Hello, Erin. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Good morning, Dorote. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You and I go way back through community in the Bay Area and earth honoring ceremonies. So it's really nice to reconnect with you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see you. Likewise.
So I have, of course, been following your work on Instagram, and recently you posted something about this idea of failing gracefully. And I was so captivated by this because failing is not really something that we deal with in a public way or in our collective story very often. So I'm just really curious about how you came to that. And yeah, tell us more.
Yeah, definitely. Failing gracefully is not so much the idea of like enjoying it or looking good while you're doing it or anything like that. But it's just this idea of when nothing seems to be working, having a kind of curiosity around that of like, well, okay, instead of continuing to just push forward or push through like we have in our culture often, there's this idea of, well, what if I pull back? What if I get quiet or soft and curious and ask, like, what does life want to happen through me? That's the idea of grace that I imagine there with the failing gracefully of like, oh, okay, this isn't happening. Life's not meeting me here. It's asking me to go a different direction. And then asking questions and being curious about, yeah, a new kind of relationship with life and co-creating with life in a different way than what you might have imagined, a way that's surprising. And I got that idea, well, from years of failing, probably not very gracefully, actually, but just doing things that weren't working, moving a lot and feeling like I was never quite in the right place and having this troubled sense of belonging and looking for home constantly and looking for something external. But I've always loved stories and I've always found so much peace and wisdom and inspiration from stories. And there's a story of a maiden who has a wicked stepmother and evil stepsisters, like they often do. And her stepmother is trying to get rid of her. So she asks her to go and weave straw into gold. So she's given an impossible task, right? Like something she's meant to fail at. And she tries so hard for so long, but it's just not going to happen. And so the idea is if she's not able to do it somehow, she's pushed down the well. But she's meant to fail because she's meant to be pushed down the well. And in the story, it's, you know, this archetype of the evil stepmother, so which would be the distorted feminine that wants her gone. But of course, she doesn't die when she falls down the well because she's the heroine of the story. She goes on this journey, this underworld journey, and she meets all of these different allies and different creatures that make her who she is. And she comes back up from the well with treasures and she's stronger and she's a different person. So that's the idea of failing gracefully. It's like we're meant to not be able to weave that straw into gold on the first go. We fall down the well because it takes us on a journey and it makes us someone different.
I love that. And I feel like there's a lot of surrender in that, which is something that I personally have a very hard time with, you know, when I'm like pushing and pushing, oh, this should work. And then there comes this moment of grace. And that might be the gracefully part where it's not like we're looking good at it and we're not doing it in this joyful way, but it's more like the grace of realizing, wait, I need to pause. I may need to ask for help. I may need to look at this in a different way.
Yes. How can I shift my entire perspective on this? How can I grow and become something different? And that's actually the alchemy then of weaving the straw into gold, right? Like that's how you learn how to do it, by not trying to do it. And it's so interesting too. Surrender is often seen as this soft quality, but it's like a fierce kind of compassion or fierce grace again too, where it takes some real grit and strength to be able to let go. And there's this quote by Naira Waheed that I love. She says, flower work is not easy. Remaining soft in fire takes time. And I just love that. Like, that's hard. Remaining soft in fire takes time. It's work.
Yeah, and especially being soft with ourselves, because I feel like we can often be so hard on ourselves when we feel, okay, this should be working. I should be successful. Something should be happening in a certain way that maybe our ego is more attached to. And then I think that grace is realizing maybe, like you said, there's a bigger picture and the earth or the universe wants a different thing from us. Like you said, what wants to happen through me instead of what do I want to make happen?
Exactly. And my teacher always says that life is not happening to you. It's happening through you. For you, by you, and through you, that's when you're standing up as a conscious co-creator, right? Of like, okay, not like this, but some other way that I'm being asked to step into. So in our culture, we have this addiction to perfection.
Yes.
Right? And we want to just like, the first time we try, already be good at it, you know? And that's kind of, you know, social media, of course, becomes like an echo chamber for those kind of things of just the highlights reel and all that. But that addiction to perfection really keeps us trapped and keeps us small, because we're meant to fail. We're meant to make mistakes. Mistakes are the portals to freedom. That's how we learn. That's how we get all of our interesting, I was going to say wrinkles and scars and everything, but yeah, it's like how we become these landscapes that have texture, right? Internally, externally, mistakes are the portals to freedom.
It's funny because I really experienced this recently in my second postpartum, and my mother-in-law and sisters-in-law came over to my house, and I was so concerned with like, does my house look perfect? Is everything perfectly arranged? And where the grace really comes in is they were there to support our family, and they wanted to find the things that were broken and dirty so they could have a way to be of service and connect with us and, you know, scrub the pot and, you know, water the plant. And because otherwise it's like, how do we connect? How do we forge these bonds? Like they want there to be a mistake or something not perfect, because how else do we relate? And so that was a big learning for me, especially in my culture that I grew up in, where it's like, okay, make everything perfect before people come over. And it's like in their culture, it's like, no, we're here to work with you. Like, you're not supposed to show up perfect. We're all just figuring this out together.
I love that image of the women coming over to tend to you, but yeah, like wanting to seem like you don't need tending, right? Yeah. And I love that, just thinking of, again, I think I read something somewhere about community, building community, and one of the easiest ways to keep yourself isolated is to never ask for help and to not need anything and to look like you've got it all under control. And so that is very isolating, and it does contribute to this existential sense of loneliness that we all have. We have this hyper sense of needing to be able to do it on our own and individualism. And it makes us all feel very lonely. There's a pervasive loneliness around it, because that's what perfectionism does. It's like, I don't need any help. I don't need anyone. And I'm thinking of like Maladoma Somei's books too, where he talks about the village and the elders and the council, and like people see you and they call you out on stuff and it's uncomfortable, but it's like, that's what a village is. And that's what community is. You need to, be seen even not at your best, right? And the same with, like, I know in teepee ceremonies, there's a lot of humor and laughing again, too, of, like, just calling people out and saying, like, I see you, but also in a good way of, like, yeah, bring that in, too. You don't have to show up here in any way that you're not. Martine Prechtel writes about that, actually, too. I think he's talking about he had debt. He borrowed money from other women in the village, and he goes to pay it back, and they're, like, chasing him and hitting him with pots and pans. They get so upset with him that he tries to pay it back because he's like, well, that's what you do. You're not supposed to owe money to people. And they had this different idea of community and owing. They're like, no, like, that means you're trying to leave us and you don't want to be part of the community. If you pay us back, it's like, you're gone. Stay with us. And, like, we all contribute to each other.
That reciprocity.
That's given with generosity because we want to be connected.
Yeah. And I found that sometimes it really is a gift to the other for them to be able to be of help to you. Like, I feel so honored if someone's vulnerable enough to be like, you know what, I'm actually really struggling. Can you help me with this thing? I'm, like, so honored that they would trust me with their, you know, mistake or their difficulty. And that happens a lot with parenting too, right? Where we're like, okay, our kiddo trusted us enough to come and say, like, hey, I did this thing. It's a beautiful thing, a way to weave community, like you said. You talked a bit about this idea of searching for home and the importance of our environment and the landscapes that we engage with. And yeah, I was wondering if you wanted to dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, I remember, so I grew up in Central Florida, and the landscape, of course, just completely shaped me. It's humid, so the air is heavy, and the ground is mostly flat. So it's got, like, a weightiness to the air and a softness to the earth, which is interesting because often, you know, in other landscapes you see mountains that are, you know, the earth has more of a weightiness and the sky is lighter because it's drier. And so it's kind of, I feel like I grew up with this sense of being not on the earth, but in the earth, right? Like this, in this actual sea of air that I could feel around me. And then as I studied more and connected more with indigenous traditions and plant medicines, I again just felt that as like, oh, we're part of the body of the earth, and we're not just like perched on top of it. We're in it. We're in this atmosphere. We're in the trees. We're in the clouds. We're underneath the sea of air. And I think that that was one of the first strongest impressions I had from that, the weight of the air and humidity of the air in Florida. And then of course the thunderstorms shaped me so strongly too. Like there's a tension that rises predictably in the afternoon and then it's released, right? There's this catharsis, there's this rhythm to things of like, yes, it gets too hot and then it lets go and it's better after that, right? And so it was interesting coming to California at some point and just being like, oh, it doesn't rain. Like it just stays kind of chill and mellow and blue sky all the time. And I was joking before, I was like, oh, it feels like the culture is kind of passive aggressive. Like they need to like get a good thunderstorm and get it out or something at some point. But yeah, I think that these looking for home is kind of in some ways we're all looking for home. And it's a way of coming back to ourselves as a part of nature, like as the body of the earth, as being creatures that are in the earth. And these elements are all shaping us because they are us, right? They're moving through us and impacting us. Like, how can we not be impacted by the clouds or the sun or the temperature, right? And as humans, you know, culturally, we've tried to like isolate ourselves in our boxes and our houses and think that it's separate. But even in the houses, of course, like the air goes straight through, right? Straight through and around, and you're still in the sea of air, just in this, the houses themselves are just made of different elements than two, the wood and the metal and the stone. So just looking at everything is still these primary threads of reality, the air, the fire, the water, the earth, right? Even if it's a TV or a car, it's still the metal, right? It still came from earth. There's nothing that didn't come from earth. I've been teaching a course with my teacher for several years that goes through the Celtic Wheel of the Year. And so the Celtic Wheel of the Year, it goes through 8 high holy days, which is the 4 equinoxes and solstices, and then the midpoints in between each of those days. And it's a way of learning to live in rhythm with the elements and with the seasons, and to recognize, yeah, what's going on externally is also going on internally. Like in the spring in Beltane, we celebrate fertility and the blooming and life coming back. And it's a fire season. So it's a time of being with relationship and sensuality and the lover and the warrior archetypes. And the counter to that is Samhain in November, which is the Celtic New Year, actually, which I love that they have the New Year is in the darkness. All beginnings come in the dark, right? The day begins at sunset because everything starts in the dark, even like a baby in the womb or a seed in the ground. But so the counter to Beltane is Samhain. And Samhain is the celebration of death and the ancestors and the letting go and the dark time of the year and the turning inward. And there's the 8 other points that go around from there, but the elements basically, so the Samhain would be the earth season, right? When the earth turns in and pulls all of its energy back into itself, back into the roots, right? And it's quiet and goes inward. And so we do the same thing in winter. But applying that to people's lives is just, you have to look at your life as having seasons. You can't be, again, like with the addiction to perfection, you can't be on all the time. You can't be in fire all the time. We need to be in earth sometimes. We need to be quieter. And there's moments of air too, where things are ephemeral and they're hard to catch. And there, but it's imagination, it's insight, and it's learning the power of words and spells. And then water, of course, then would be emotions and dealing with, dropping into intuition and doing dream work and recognizing the depth of things and the mystery of things and being with that. So it's a beautiful, way of journeying through landscapes, internal and external. It's a beautiful way of connecting with your psyche. And so more recently, I've put together a mentoring series called the Crossroads Mentoring. And it's for a series of 4 one-hour sessions, one-on-one, where we go through the elements. Basically, it's an invitation to people who have gone through big transitions in their life, which I feel like everyone that I've talked to recently is going through some really big change. If it's a big insight or like plant medicine journey or change of relationship or loss of job or a move, oftentimes we go through this change and it felt like there was so much energy that was gathered to create this change. And then you kind of get through it, but it's like, well, I'm still in between somehow. It feels like there's still like, you're in this liminal space of the old life is sort of gone, but the new life's not there yet. So I'm calling this landscape that we enter in the borderlands. I've spent quite a bit of time here where it's very fertile and it's very magical. And it is like these places that are, where land meets sea or where a cliff turns to air all of a sudden. It's like, oh, the elements are changing right now in my life. And it's terrifying. And I love the word terror because it's like, it's connected with the earth again. What terrifies you reminds you that you're an animal and you have an animal body and you're from the earth. So it's igniting you, right? It's bringing your senses alive and awake in a different way. Or you can imagine too, if you're in a misty, foggy landscape, you can't see what's around you. So you have to move more slowly and you have to feel. Right? It asks you to go, the landscape itself asks you to go internal and use different senses to make your way, right? It's kind of the difference between sunlight and moonlight too, right? The sun is so bright and you can see everything around you and it's sharp and it's clear and that's the solar energy. And then the moonlight is like, it's softer and it's magical and it's mysterious, but it's like, it's not quite clear. You can't quite see the shape of that tree or the shadow that's coming near you, but you get a sense of it and you feel it. And again, the sun erases all the other stars. You can only see the sun, but the moon, you can still see the stars. So it's a different kind of depth and just a different way of seeing. And being in these in-between liminal spaces and our transitions in our life is like that. It's learning how to be in your life differently and how to use different faculties of awareness and senses to create something new and different. And again, circling back to that idea of like, well, what does life want to happen through me now? Like, what am I being asked to step up into or in deeper into, right? So yeah, we use the elements then as a guiding force there, because when you're in the mists, again, it's like, well, how do you orient? What is happening here? The only thing that's happening is nature, right? It's like, you can't really quite like, there's not like a full map, but there can be a compass, right? The landscape is unknown, but the way of knowing can be known. So we have airs in the east. That's where the sun rises. And that's the inspiration. And that's like the beginning of things. And that's the future. And then we have fire in the south, which is, it's warmer and it's brighter and it's the spiritual body. And again, it's the relating of like, okay, well, first there's just a concept, and then the concept can come to how does that concept relate with what's around me? And then you move into water, which has, again, a little bit more substance, more and more substance from air to fire to water. Water's in the west and it's the setting sun. So it's like, okay, you know where the sun rises and where it sets. So you know what's bright and you know what's dark. Right? You get the inspiration, and then you have to go into like, well, what does that inspiration actually mean to me? What's solid underneath there? And what are my emotions telling me? So we, again, value and honor emotions as messengers, right? They're so important to bring that in. And the hormones and the endocrine system of the body, they're wise. And they're, again, portals to freedom, like letting them flow and letting them move through makes you someone different, right? Like your endorphins after a good cry is like, oh, things are possible again. Whereas if you're like, I'm not going to cry because I'm tough, I'm going to handle it, then you don't actually get that release of the thunderstorm, right? Like I was talking about in Florida again. And then finally, we come back to earth in the north. And earth contains all of them in its own way, but it's grounded and it's solid and it's manifestation. And it's your ancestors and it's your physical body and it's how you nourish. And it's how you know where you belong and how you're connected. And this, again, it includes all of them, but it's also like, yeah, and now I'm here and this is what I'm doing and this is where I belong and who I am moving forward. And we do that all the time, right? It's not just a one-time process either, of course.
So the directions are the compass, and we kind of orient ourselves to understand what season we're in or where we find ourselves in that path.
Right. Right. And they're based on actual, right, directions of what's going on with the sun, east to west and then north to south.
And we're always the middle. We're always the center of that, right?
You're right. We're the fifth element that's alive. That's, again, also an integration of all these pieces, because we are these elements woven together, right, through the mental body, the spiritual body, the emotional body, and then the physical body.
I love it so much because it's, to me, really weaving the feminine way of being back into life instead of sort of the patriarchal linear way of thinking about progress and evolution and things like that. And I'm always humbled by this idea that that healing or life itself is a spiral and it does go in a circle. And sometimes we revisit things that we thought we had fully dealt with. And it's like, no, here's the next layer.
And I thank you for bringing that in. Because of course, you know, there's the idea of the hero's journey, which is just looks like it just goes in one direction, but right, it's a spiral. You have to make it kind of 3D of like, and you go back and forth and you cross back over certain landscapes because there's still medicine for you. It's not a punishment. It's not like, oh, I didn't get it, I'm here again. It's like, oh, okay, there was more medicine here that I missed last time. So again, looking at these borderland places, not as like a bad thing, but just being curious about them, like, why am I here again in the mist? And like, why do I need to just practice this not knowing or this discomfort again? And then, yeah, there's kind of a point at some point too. Oh, there's a couple different things I want to say here about the mist, because there's a way of being initiated from the Avalonian traditions that I want to talk about. But I also want to talk here just for a moment about that moment of coming to the crossroads finally, because the borderlands themselves are just, it's vast and it's again, like swampy, marshy landscapes where different elements are colliding, and there's a lot of fertility there and a lot of creativity and possibility, but it does keep you in that place of like potential energy rather than kinetic energy, where you're still kind of like in that lunar-esque kind of way of seeing and feeling things. And it's good to go and come back. And some people are like, kind of like the fairy people, like the ones who, I was saying fairy, but I meant like as a boat keeper, but obviously fairy people too, of course. I saw your eyes light up there too, right? The people in different ways, that are kind of like, they understand those landscapes and they're comfortable there. So they can come and go and they can kind of be like guides through those landscapes. So in, the Avalonian traditions and legends, there's the Isle of Avalon, right? And to be initiated and to be able to be a part of that lineage, you have to go through the mists and you have to be able to speak the word of power that parts the mists so that that fairy can cross the water and get onto the island, which is land, which is again fog and water. And then the sacredness of naming something and having a word of power, because the power of your word changes things. It's an actual vibration of stepping into co-creation. And I love that there's etymologically weird, word, and wild, W-Y-R, all come from that same little core. And it means to be in between the worlds. So it's like to have a foot in both worlds. So when you use your word, you can actually clear and part those mists because you want something. You're clear about something that brings in the clarity and the direction of moving forward. And life and death too, like with those kind of initiations, like if you're lost in the mist, you're not going to make it back and you can drown in those marshes there. And it's just a really powerful image of like, well, when you're in those borderlands, how do you get yourself to an actual crossroads place, a decision point, right? And there's so many, like, it's so individualized because part of being in the borderlands is like you have to stop fighting it. You can't be like, oh, I'm just so done with this. It's like, okay, you have to get curious, accept and surrender to it, but then also be aware of like, yes, at some point I want something different for myself. And then again, that word and that wanting connects you with your desire, which is also the desire etymologically comes from of the stars. So it connects you with your destiny. And then like you want something and you know that it's part of something that is yours, your destiny. And you can speak it and you can start articulating it. And then you may get to a crossroads point. And the crossroads point is interesting because now it looks like you're coming to this place of seeing a little bit more clearly that there's options and there's potentials. And so people can get stuck there spinning around too, of wanting to pick the right one and wanting to do it right and wanting to know what's going to happen so they can pick the best one. But you don't get to know. You have to choose. Again, you have to kind of have that invisible trust in yourself of choosing without knowing how it's going to play out. And one of the things, again, my teacher always says and reminds me, my teacher, Holly Hamilton, she says, the thing to know about the crossroads is you can't choose wrong. And that's so freeing. I love that. You can't choose wrong because you're the one making the meaning. You know, you're the one who's creating this life. And so once you get there, a lot of us get stuck of like, I really want to choose the right one. And I've gotten stuck in decision points for years and stayed there. But then, once you realize, okay, the one I'm choosing is the right one, you own it and you own your life and have responsibility for your life in a different way. Which is really part of that idea of like, that's how magic is created, right? The ability to change consciousness at will, where you stand up from, I have this other image too, of just being a little girl in Florida in the waves, like in the really shallow part, where the waves are just kind of tumbling me and crushing me and like getting kind of like washed, like feeling like I'm in a washing machine. I'm like, oh, this is never going to end. And then at some point just realizing like, I have legs, like I'm not actually like a little fish creature, and just standing up and realizing the water's like 2 feet deep, right? I mean, like, oh, okay, this was a choice. Like I experienced that, of how it would feel to just be tumbled infinitely in this wave, or I can stand up and I can have my feet and I can realize like, okay, the waves are crashing around me, but I have agency here. I have power and I have legs and I can choose how I'm going to interact with this surf, this wave.
I have full body chills because this feels so relevant, not only to my life, but it feels like humanity itself is on this precipice of realizing, wait a minute, I have legs. We can stand up. We can co-create instead of just be constantly reacting in fear and life can be quite difficult, but that ability to, what is it, just wake up to our idea of having choice, or at least responding from a place of power within us, even if we can't control the external.
Yeah, I think it's a point to some extent of being done with it, right? Like, I don't know, again, like, I think I remember somebody saying at some point, like, you bang your head against the wall until you're done with that, right? Or like when I was this little girl, I was like, oh, I hate this. I'm so like sick of being tossed in the waves. And it's like, well, what can I do differently then? Like, right? I can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. What can I do differently then? And that's the moment of the crossroads too, where it's like, okay, there's a decision point here of like, I want to do something different. I want different results. And we are at that point collectively, culturally, of like, hey, are we going to keep doing the same things, right? Are we going to keep just like overusing and having this selfish, like corporation driven kind of capitalistic worldview, or are we going to try to work more collaboratively and more thoughtfully and think a little bit further ahead, longer term, for future generations? Like, can we as a culture come out of this crossroads and look back and be like, oh yeah, there was a decision point for us here and we chose right.
And so you're standing at the crossroads, and at some point maybe you just get sick of standing at the crossroads and you're like, I'm done with being indecisive and I need to move in a direction.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so it's kind of like you roam the borderlands until they're done with you, until you're done with them and they're done with you. It's a two-way relationship for sure. And then you get to the crossroads where it's like, okay, the fog lifts a little bit and now you can see there's paths, because the borderlands is just infinite, all directions, fog and mist. And it's disorienting, and it's meant to be disorienting, right? Because it wants to change how your capacity for being with complexity and your way of how you understand things and how you move through life. But then, yeah, at some point that's complete. And the crossroads, you get to the crossroads point where it's like, okay, now I have choices. And then still some people can spin there, and I've spun there for a while too, looking at all the choices and trying to pick the right one. But you have to let go of that perfection in there of, okay, whichever one I pick is the right one. And this is the one I feel right now based on all of this experience I've had in the borderlands. I feel in my gut and my feet and my legs, I'm going to walk this way. I'm going to own it. It's going to be the right one because I'm the meaning maker. And I am creating my life. Let's see what happens. And sometimes you take a couple steps that way and it's like, oh, not that one. Back up. Go the other way. And then it's like, okay, that works. I've done that a couple times for sure.
And that sort of ties into the failing gracefully, where it's like you have the grace not to be doing everything perfectly, but more to actually realize, oh, this may not be for me. I may need to take a few steps back, and that's okay.
Exactly. It's okay to back out because you're still connected with your integrity and your intuition of like, oh, okay, based on all the information I had, I did walk this way, and then I got new information and it wasn't right anymore. So I did have to back up or come out of it, right? That happens in relationship or something a lot of times, or in places that we come to, or in jobs or positions. And I'm just thinking, I'm reading this book about lion tracking right now. And they say something similar where it's like you're tracking. So you have to use all your senses and you're looking, you're just looking for the lions. And sometimes you go down these paths that don't lead to a lion, but that's okay because now you know that path doesn't lead to the lion, but you know what you're looking for. So you just backtrack and you keep looking for the lions. Like now you know that track does not lead to a lion.
So it is actually progress in terms of knowledge, but maybe not in terms of the landscape you're navigating.
Right? It's a different way of measuring progress. So what did you learn?
Yeah.
Who did you become? Right? And I felt that on with plant medicine journeys before too, where it's like, I have all these questions and like, I want the plants to just tell me like, what do I do here? And how do I do this? And I end up the next morning with no answers, but more questions, but also like, well, they've changed me. So now I'm ready. So whatever is inside of me is going to, I'm going to be able to respond, right? I love that idea of like the word responsibility is actually being able to respond. So because I know and trust who I am now and how I've been changed by that experience, I know what I'm capable of. So in the moment, I will know what to do. I don't know what to do right now, but in the moment, I'm going to know. When it's time to know, I'll know. And again, I've had another teacher that says, you know everything in the exact moment you need to know it, not a moment before.
I had an elder who would always say, it's not a mistake if you learned from it. And as you speak, I'm really curious about, so there may be folks who are listening who feel not as connected to their intuition, or maybe they don't have that self-trust of, when I feel this way, I know that it's my intuition or my guts kind of telling me this is the next step. And I think that a lot of us come by that very honestly, because in our culture, we're not taught how to really trust our internal compass and our internal knowing. And also, so much of the dominant society is about sort of lies and trickery. So I think sometimes our compass gets off because people say something but don't mean it. Their energy is different than their words or actions. And I think it can get really twisted about. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts or advice for those who are like, I really want to be able to connect to my intuition, or I want to be able to really know myself or my inner world that way, but it's just confusing to them.
That's a great question. And it is, we are taught in our culture so much of the external approval and, like, you know, like looking for the teacher or the guru or something else external, or the parents that are supposed to know. And we're not taught to just, yeah, find our own knowing and ask our own questions, right? And I love the word question, because it has the word quest in it, right? So we're all meant to go on our own quest, and that's kind of robbed from us in our culture, because it's just easier if we kind of all conform to a one-size-fits-all addiction to perfection kind of model. But so where to start with that is, right, you won't get swept up in all of the different power dynamics and distractions that happen in our culture if you're just rooted in yourself. And so I think it starts with a curiosity of, oh, how would it feel if I knew, right? How would it feel if I was in touch with my body, and I saw my body as something wise that's alive, it's part of the earth and part of these greater cycles. Like, how would that feel to trust that there's something inside of me that just knows? And just starting with those questions, because that's, again, the beginning of a quest, being curious. And then, I mean, I think there's kind of probably having to go against some of the stories that have come up where the body's gotten demonized as like this, or that even the animal self is something that's lesser or doesn't know. So just, again, kind of checking in with, how do you know what's true for yourself? And for me, again, I've been lucky. I've had all these amazing teachers and mentors, but those are just such good questions of, when you're reading something, or when you come, how do you know what you know? When you come to know these things, these sudden epiphany kind of things, what does that feel like in your body? Right? Like, and I practice, actually, one of my teachers would do this check-in of just tell yourself something that's very easily true, and ask your body where that is, like your name. Say, okay, my name is Erin. And like, check in with your body of, where do you feel that? It's like, oh, I feel it in my heart. That's a yes, that's true. Or say, my name is Sally. And like, oh no, that's not true. That's, I feel that in my low belly. Of like, that's a no. And so you can just check in with yourself of like, I like chocolate, or I like cats, or like, today's Saturday. And really just ask yourself, and then your body can start to talk, like really start listening in those really simple kind of game-like ways. Because we learn, ideally, like if we're in an indigenous village, we learn these things as children, right? And we're asking questions to ourselves, and we're playing games. So you can kind of start to make little games with yourself to ask your body, so you can start to know your own internal compass of what is true and what is real. And then you can, then the questions can get more complex of like, oh, is this a good job for me right now or not? And you'll know how to feel it. And because you've invited your body into a conversation, right? Instead of just using our bodies like vehicles that we drive around all day, it's like, well, what if we're alive? What if our whole body's alive and wise and wants to tell us things? Like, what if we have a conversation, right? Yeah. Thing is, like, mind wants to think it's just this separate thing that's in charge of everything else. And the mind is beautiful and amazing and magical and powerful. And it's meant to be just one part of, again, all the elements of the ecosystem of the body. The mind is the mental realm, which is the air, but there's the four other bodies that go together too. And we want to have them all online and working for us.
Yes. Thank you for that. It makes me think of sometimes when we're beginning our journey with more intuitive way of looking at the world or animist way of looking at the world, we have books that tell us what the plants or the stones or the animals mean, quote unquote, right? But like, if we can start to ask ourselves, well, what does this plant or animal or stone or other element mean to me in this moment? That's where it gets really powerful, because then you're really in communion and relationship with the elements and beings on this planet, instead of just, oh, let's Google, what does it mean that I saw a wolf? It's like, no, what does it mean to you that you saw a wolf?
I love that you brought that in. Thank you. Because a lot of people do think, oh, okay, now I'm getting my intuition online because they're starting to read what other people say. But it's the same with dream work or anything else. It's like, well, what does that dream mean to you? You're the main one who knows. And so giving yourself back that agency of not what somebody else saw in it, maybe it supplements, but always, always check in with yourself first and honor like your first intuitive hit, because that's how you strengthen what you know. And like, that's how you develop that conversation that's very rich and alive with your body as a body of nature and an ecosystem and a force of wisdom and knowing. It's so alive, and the path and like this way of being in the world is inherently wild, that it's kind of always surprising. Right? I think that's part of how I know it's like real, where it's like, oh, I'm not just doing this. I'm not just like making this up. I'm in a relationship with something that's alive and wild. And so wild to me, I think some people think of it as meaning good or bad. But it just means it's unpredictable to me. Like, it's unknown. It's actually going to be something that's emergent. So I feel like this way of working and being in life and with the seasons is just full of surprises, is full of the unknown, because there's a humility around recognition of change, right? You're constantly going through the seasons and the cycles. You get comfortable with one thing, and the only thing you know is that it's about to change again. Like, there's these brief moments, like I had mentioned, the 8 high holy days, which are the equinoxes and the solstices and the midpoints between those, and they're just a brief moment. And then everything changes again. Or it's like, okay, we've reached the peak now, peak height, right? We're coming up to Letha this summer with the summer solstice, June. And we're going to come to the height of the light. And then it's going to change, right? We climb the mountain and then we descend again, right? And it just keeps going and going. And another thing that's always really powerful is just that you can continue doing this work. It's a lifetime path, right? Because everything is always changing. You're changing and the world is changing and the seasons constantly change. So you come back to these same really beautiful foundational grounding practices of, making offerings or just connecting with gratitude or going for walks by the rivers or having a little fire ceremony and letting go of things. And the thing is that it's going to be different every time. Like, it's always going to be a surprise because you can't know what's going to happen. When you're really there and really present and things are actually emerging, it's always a surprise.
I love that idea of that, you know, when you really are alive, you surprise yourself even. And I always like, I tell myself that because I don't want to get to a place where I'm so sort of cemented in my identity where it's like, well, no, Dorte does this and this is how I am and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I really want to be surprised. I want to surprise my own self and be like, whoa, who knew?
Yeah. And that's beautiful. Like, when you can surprise yourself, then, I mean, all of your relationships can be more alive then too, right? When we don't just like, when we give ourselves that grace or that capacity for complexity to still be wild and alive and unknown, then we give that gift to others then too, where it's like, oh, okay, this person is usually this type, but I'm not going to block them into that role. I'm going to like open up that maybe they could surprise me today. And then that opens up what's possible for them. I sometimes think about like the wave and the particle theory of like, how your expectation as an observer changes what happens, right? So I think of that with people too, like, oh, like what if they're going to be a wave today, not a particle? Like, what if they could just be totally different and surprise me? And I always forget who says this quote, but I think it's Pablo Neruda or Gabriel Garcia Marquez. He says, I know my wife well enough to know that she's a complete mystery. And I like that, like just knowing someone well enough to know that they're wild and alive and they're still a mystery is like, what a gift to give anyone in your life, your mom or your brother or your kids. Like, wow, they can keep growing and learning them. There's not that imposed box and structure placed on them.
Yeah, like meeting them. Who are you today? Or who are we together in relationship today?
And it's like that in therapy or in sessions and mentoring and stuff too. And some of the things I'm learning in school of like, if you're still with the same client that you were with last week, what are you doing wrong? Right? Is it still the same person? Really? Check how you're maybe keeping them stuck. I would love to invite people who are curious to learn more about the elements or Celtic Wheel of the Year. I have a online self-guided course that goes for a full year. It's a monthly content. It has like a fully recorded live talk and PDF handouts with recipes and practices and guided meditations. So it's a good way of just like kind of self-guided dropping themselves into that rhythm of working with the seasons if they're interested in that. And then I also do one-on-one work that you can add on to support that dropping into the seasons and working with the elements and coming back into rhythm with Gaia, going through the celebrations of the High Holy Days. And I always look at individuals as, you know, sacred nature and ecosystems, right, as part of the elements. So it's like a really beautiful, powerful work to do when we work one-on-one of just looking at your life and what all is going on and kind of, again, like taking out some of that judgment and that need for perfection and just looking at like, well, if you just look at yourself elementally, like, okay, maybe you need more water here or you need a little bit more earth here, and we can work with like, how does that look in a grounded, practical way of like bringing in structures, working with boundaries or coming back to fluidity, right? It's just a really nice way of organizing your life and then taking perspective and looking at things. And then I also have the Crossroads Mentoring Series, which just is specifically meant to be at 4 one-on-one sessions where we do air, fire, water, earth, and we go through, okay, we're going to go through the ideas and the stories, and then we're going to go through relationships and what's happening there, and then we're going to go through intuition and practices and dream work and creativity and movement. And then we're going to make a plan of like, okay, here's the integration. This is our little 4-step way of like, here we are trying to get out of the borderlands. We're in the crossroads. Let's have a little bit of support and a container that's based in the elements, that's based in the earth to help bridge that connection between what was and what's coming, right? Which is sometimes we just need a little help with that bridge, a little bit of extra support or a stronger container. And the elements are great guides for that work. I would love to work with anyone who's curious about that, or if they want to reach out and ask questions. I also have a free elemental bodies meditation on my website, so they can do like, it's like a 30-minute meditation of just, again, dropping into all the different bodies, air, fire, water, and earth, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And that's a little way to just harmonize and fine tune if you're curious about feeling into how the elements feel in your body a little bit more.
Beautiful. And where can listeners find you online?
So my website right now is dawnofthewild.com. And I'm also on Instagram as Erin Kundry.
I believe you had a little discount for listeners if they wanted to do a 1-hour session with you, right?
It's usually like $144, and I believe I was discounting it to $90 if they want to do a one-on-one mentoring session with me. And I also do the sliding scale to try to make it accessible to anyone.
Thank you so much, Erin. This is such a beautiful conversation, and it makes me think of my personal mantra, which is, you are the food of life. Make yourself delicious.
Yeah, thank you for talking with me. I love connecting with you, and I'm always curious to hear your thoughts and where you're at.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate and review Moonwise on Apple Podcasts, as it makes a big difference in helping others find us. You can also sign up for our weekly magazine dedicated to inspiration and seasonal wisdom at moonwise.co/magazine. See you next time.